I was working at a swim school at that time. I'm the director of client services and class management. And the school used a proprietary software for scheduling, billing, running their business, etc. And it was on its third rewrite at that point, and it wasn't going well. It made signing up new swimmers really hard, finding a class really hard, making changes really hard. And I always had a ton of ideas for it. So at some point, the owners of the school just said, here you go. This is your problem now. Make it great.
Hi, and welcome to another podcast on enterprise agility brought to you by the Agility Crew. Our crew consists of leading experts in the industry who give their knowledge freely to invest in the skills we all need. Now let's join our crew for this week's episode.
Well, hi, it's Ian.
And it's Maria.
Yeah, it's just the two of us for this one. Ricardo is somewhere in Brazil. He's gone off to see his dad, I think. And we just never see, he's just not around. He says he's going to be there, but he's not. But I can hardly complain. I've been disappearing for 3 or 4 weeks in Africa, and we sound like we're these explorers. It's really funny, isn't it? Anyway, we got just myself and Maria to talk about. We wanted to take advantage of this to just do the episode we promised a while ago, Maria, which is just to let people know about you. They sort of hear me all the time, and they hear Eric and Ricardo, but as the newcomer to our group, certainly not a newcomer to the experience, we promised our listeners an episode where they'd hear a bit about you. And so we thought we'd do that today, if that's okay. So I'm going to ask you 5 questions. And however, it does sound a bit like an interview. I'm sorry about that. It's a bit weird. I just thought I'll structure it around some questions and you can just answer the questions. You're not applying for a job with me. But I thought that's how we do it. So first thing is, how did you fall into this kind of job?
Unusually, I feel most people fall into agile coaching or scrum mastery in a very unusual roundabout way. I was working at a swim school at that time. I'm the director of client services and class management, and the school used a proprietary software for scheduling, billing, running their business, etc. And it was on its third rewrite at that point, and it wasn't going well. It made signing up new swimmers really hard, finding a class really hard, making changes really hard. And I always had a ton of ideas for it. So at some point, the owners of the school just said, here you go. This is your problem now. Make it great. And I dove right into it. And my first meeting with the developers, which was a small team in Germany that was just founded by a childhood friend of one of the founders of the swim school. So no pressure. And I went to the engineers and I said, all right, well, you know, this is what we need and this is what it's got to do. And here's the requirements. And they're like, oh no, read about this agile stuff. You need to write a story around this and you need to break these stories down to be small enough based on our judgment. And I was like, what do you mean? You need requirements. Here's the requirements. You're engineers. You make magic. And so I started diving into stories. I had no idea what I was doing, but I was functioning as, looking back on it now, I can say I was functioning as the product owner, the QA tester, and the scrum master. So getting a sense of what do we need within this tool to manage the classes, to provide boutique customer service, which was the goal, and working with also the business owners to understand, well, what kind of signals or reports do you need on how classes are running, signups, etc., to run your business. And we turned it around pretty quickly. I think 3 or 4 months later, the school raised its prices for the first time. Inflation happened and all that. And
was that because you actually had data that could tell you how you were doing?
It is because of the software getting into a better spot. They were able to get reporting on the business. They were able to measure business operations in the way that they needed. And the sign-up process did go faster. We added in a bunch of new functionality into it that made scheduling easier. One of the common things that we had was, you know, kids would go on vacation for 3 weeks and parents wanted to block out those classes. other parents wanted to swim in that spot, that, and they would all talk to each other on the pool deck and try to swap classes. And so we added this functionality of, all right, this kid's going to be out for 3 to 4 weeks. That spot is available for a short time period to another swimmer where that schedule might work better. And then from there, I got a call from my neighbor growing up, and he's like, hey, you're like really good at organizing and you seem to love it. So do you want to be a project manager? I can recommend you to this paywall company that I used to work at. They need somebody with your skills. I think you'd be great at it. I had no idea, again, what I was getting myself into, and I just went for it. And at that job also, they asked me, you know, you're going to be a project manager, but we like to use Scrum. And the premise, the project I was working on is rewriting, again, their app, but with additional functionality, like a next-gen version of the paywall. And from there, I just progressed and I kept learning and reading as much as I can on my own, trying to make sense of my title as a project manager, but I'm doing Scrum Master stuff. I don't know how to make sense of this. I'm just going to like, do you like these results? You like these results. All right, let's keep going. What can we do better? I've always had an eye for reflecting and efficiency. So every time I did something, I always wanted to learn, how could this have gone better? And what about it works well or is valuable to you?
Well, I think that's the key reason that we connected, actually, because of that attitude of yours to always try and improve and get better. And you tell a great story there. Of course, the books say, I want to ask you about this, because all the books, and you know, I'm from the Jeff Sutherland School. That's where I learned my trade. And I said to him once, I think I am the product owner and the Scrum Master on a team, and I may also be, I'm also a coder. And he said, well, the only two roles you can't do at the same time are product owner and Scrum Master, he said, because, and then he explained to me the basic original thinking, which was essentially you take what is a PM role and you point the inward stuff to the team improving, team efficiency, and call that a Scrum Master. And you point all the other stuff outwards, finances, stakeholder management, all that. Because in his original thinking, he said the project manager has two hats that contradict each other and can't be worn at the same time well. And so, and I certainly think when you're in a big company, that's probably true. But I remember saying to him, can it be done? And he said, you have to be very good to be that. You have to be like a split personality. You have to be able to take care of the team with one in the morning, take care of the team, and in the afternoon, you know, take care of the project and tell the team off. And I believe completely you can do it, Maria. I think you're very talented, but I do remember this split head problem that he talked about.
The worst is 100% split head. I view it like putting on one pair of sunglasses. I'm looking at this through the perspective of a product owner versus I'm looking at this from the perspective of a Scrum Master. And the lens analogy works because you can only wear one pair of glasses at a time, but realistically in practice there is conflict. I've definitely made mistakes. I'm not trying to say I'm perfect and I'm doing it well, but it is a challenging, and I agree with you, it can be done, but it takes the right mindset and the right level of self-awareness to be able to pull that off.
And I think maybe in the traditional methods, the pressure from the business, the budgets, the finance, that pressure feeds itself to the team in the end. And in the newer ways of working, the Scrum Master tends to protect the team from that. That's the newer form. But dual hats is always difficult. Very quick story. I once worked with a guy who we were working on a project. It was a long time ago, a waterfall project. We were part of the coding team. We were coding, and he was seconded to the testing team for a week. So he went off to the testing team and literally went and sat somewhere else in the building, you know, completely separate. He's a very thorough guy, very diligent. And he would raise faults. Paper, they were all paper, you know, piece of paper, book full of faults. He would raise them while he was doing testing for the week. Then he'd come back into our team the following week as the coder, and he'd reply to these saying they weren't bugs. His own paperwork, he would reply saying, from this view, I can't see why this is a bug. The following week, he'd be back in the testing team and he'd reply to himself saying, no, this is really a bug and this is why. And this happened for 4 weeks until one of our managers went, his name was also Ian, Ian, enough is enough, okay? You can't keep doing this. Please stop it. And he goes, but when I'm here, I can see it's not a bug. It's exactly what we want. When I'm there, I can... So anyway, so that dual hat is... Yeah, Jekyll and Hyde. Yes, yes, that dual hat. And there are lots of tensions. We could do an entire episode on that. But in its root, that's where that tension in the project manager role is where Jeff and Ken came up with the idea of the scrum master looking to protect the team and get the team super efficient and the product owner outward looking to all the stakeholders. So if that's where you how you got into it, though, Maria... What exactly are you doing right now then? What's your job right now? And I don't want to say how many years ago was that, because that would be an inappropriate question to ask a nice young lady such as yourself. But, you know, have you had a long journey?
That was over a decade ago.
Okay.
So I'm well into my journey, I think, at this point. Though, if we're making an analogy to the mountain, I'm maybe a sixth of the way up. Like, everything I've learned, I've discovered, wow, there's so much more I don't know and so much deeper that I can go on this new piece of information that I've acquired. Currently, I'm working as an Agile Coach Manager at an ad tech startup that is going through hypergrowth. So it's been very exciting. It kind of feels like riding an electric bull sometimes, where you never know if you're going to be thrown off and you're holding on for dear life in some moments, and other moments you're like, yeah, I got this. I don't know what I was thinking, fearing anything.
It's like, there's like days when you think, I'm winning. I'm definitely winning. I'm definitely, oh, I've fallen off.
Yes. But there is a lot of experimenting. I think that's what really appeals to me. Within the startup space, everything is new. There's a lot of potential. There's a lot more risk taking, because that the risk is the only way that you can try out success.
Yeah, brilliant line, brilliant set. And I think one of the reasons I was encouraged when I invited you to join our team was because, actually, Ricardo and I particularly are at the other end of the spectrum. We have always worked for very, very large companies. We've always worked for companies that are 50,000 people, that have been around for 20 years minimum, some have been around for 200 years, you know? What?
Bit hard to hear you. You sound a bit muffled.
Do I? Is that any better?
Fabulous. Loud and clear.
Good, good. Let me do an edit there then. And I'll go back to Ricardo and I. You know, we've just always lived with big companies. We've always had companies that have, you know, I mean, I think the company I'm currently at is about 35,000, and that's one of the lowest numbers I've had. So that's why I wanted to encourage you to join us, by the way, because you've got a startup mentality and you've also got this great learning attitude, which is fantastic. Okay, so that's what you're doing now. Why do you like it then? What really gets you going about it?
Improving. Learning. I think I'm really passionate about learning. I mean, I didn't know how to take care of myself at all. I have this belief that nobody's born knowing how to do anything except breathe and cry. Maybe sleep, but even babies need help falling asleep from time to time. And so when I look back at just my life experience, emigrating to America, the experience that I had growing up in an immigrant family in America and things like that, one thing that is a constant with all the people that I've seen succeed or overcome challenging scenarios is that growth mindset, being able to detach emotionally from the experience or the situation in order to analyze it as objectively as possible, and analyze it not from the perspective of blame, but from the perspective of, hey, we have power here. And we can't change the past, but we can learn from the past so that we could do just a little bit different the next time or tomorrow or even in the next hour. And so even when I worked as a project manager, where there was a little bit more command and control, my projects were a reflection of my performance. And I had to motivate people that I have no authority or influence over, especially early in my career where I don't have as much credibility as I'd like to think I have now. It really came down to, hey, I want to make this better. We keep having this type of scenario or this type of issue. It's frustrating to everyone. We are creating the project timelines. We are creating the processes. What do we need to change within the system to get a little bit of a better result next time? And that, I think, is what gets me up in the morning. I'm really passionate about learning. I'm a curious person by nature. I have to refrain from asking the myriad of questions that run through my head. And when I analyze situations, I'm a very analytical person. An analogy best describes it. We're all standing around an object. And when I talk about seeing things from different perspectives, it's like if that object is a gemstone and the light's hitting it, everywhere, every angle that you look at the gemstone, you're going to see something different within it. And I think that collaboration, co-creation is very much walking around a gemstone, looking at what we're creating and trying to craft it to get the exact shine or brightness or refraction of light that we're seeking.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I like doing the training that we do, because every time I pick up a subject, I think, oh, good, I'm going to see someone else's viewpoint today and I'm going to improve what I understand about this issue. And I can improve myself more by hearing other people talk. And, you know, occasionally I do get feedback. It would be nice if someone other than Ian had an opinion. So I have to be careful about that and make sure I sort of point it out. But I start to feel like there's so much I want to say, but also there's so much I want to listen to. That's partly why I think we can get on, you see. Okay, so how are we doing for time? Okay, 16 minutes. We promised about 20. So two questions left then. And one's a spot question, so you don't know what it's going to be. The others we did say in advance. So where do you want to go to next then? What's your career path or trajectory likely to be, Maria?
This is going to sound unusual. I've never had a specific path.
It's not unusual at all. It's not unusual at all. Everybody wonder. I mean, these people who say, you know, I grew up at six, I knew I was going to be a CEO of a large... rubbish. They had no idea. They wander. We meander into things, I think. But anyway, go on.
I do like that, yeah. I ultimately want to be able to continue working with startups. I would like to eventually move closer into enterprise coaching space. I think leadership is such a pivotal role within an organization, and it's not just like, you know, a business organization. I'm also talking like government and schools, community organizations. Leadership is prevalent everywhere. And what I'm really passionate about within Agile as well is the concept of servant leadership, practices like Gemba, practices like the Andan Cord, building psychological safety. I think it's what our society really needs after the COVID pandemic is more, how do we work together effectively to reach some kind of goal? How do we hear from varying perspectives in a respectful manner? And ultimately, how do we reach agreement on the thing that needs to be done, because time is of the essence? So I'm noticing myself moving more into kind of a systems coaching from a leadership lens perspective. It's still kind of new, but just the more I study and the more I observe what happens, I think we have to change our environment and we have to design our environments intentionally in order to enable people to succeed. Because if we don't do that, people will just blame each other and we'll never get to actually fixing the system.
My wife, who's a gardener, says that if she could design estates these days for people to live in, no one would have a garden. There would be a communal garden that everyone had to work together to keep running. And it would be a center square where everyone had to put time and effort in to make it work and work together to get it out and build on each other. And I think that illustration she's made to me in the past is very much what you're saying there, really. I think it's the same thing, which is you want to go fast, you can go on your own, but you want to go far, go with other people, work with other people, learn from other people, understand it. I mean, I think only this weekend, Maria, I was in Uganda preaching at a very, very large church, a line from the Bible, forgive me for quoting it, said, make every effort to live together in peace. And the phrase in Greek, make every effort, is the strongest kind of language that can be put together. It could almost be fight as though it really mattered that you keep at peace with everyone else. And I do like it. I do like the idea that you sort of, you know, you never win if others lose. You just win if everybody wins. All right. Go on, please.
No, you go.
Yeah. It's my spot question. This is the one you don't know is coming. In the last 6 months, what's the biggest thing you learned that you think can make a big difference?
Actually wrote it on a post-it. It was a bit of an epiphany I had. Enable the team more than you protect them. As a project manager, I viewed my ability to serve the organization and protect the team as surfacing learnings and evolving the process, and evolving how we apply and planning and build plans and all of that. And I'm starting to shift more into kind of my swimming roots where, you know, we would have 3 and 4 year olds who don't really have a lot of dedicated attention span. They want to play, they want to have fun, they want to explore, they don't have a great sense of danger. And so they'll jump off the platform and realize, oh, I can't swim and there's nothing to hold on to. And sometimes we would have to let them struggle a little bit. We're watching them, we know that they're safe, they're not drinking water or anything like that, but we have to let them experience controlled failure in order for them to understand why they maybe need to listen to directions, where their own limits lie, where their own discomforts lie. And we cannot do them if we don't let them have that experience of struggling a little bit. And so when I was a project manager and trying to set everybody up for success, because my performance is based on my projects, it was a lot more protecting the team. And as I've shifted deeper into coaching, it's a lot more, how can we set up an environment that allows some mistakes? How can we enable people more by removing the protection? We're still looking out for them. We're still supporting the team or the person. But we're taking the training wheels off. And we're riding that bike down the mountain without training wheels. And eventually they're going to figure it out, which is also how I learned how to ride a bike.
Again, forgive the biblical illustration. There's a fantastic illustration of an eagle mother. The chicks are in the nest, and she throws them out. And then she watches to see whether they start flying or not. And if they don't, she goes and catches them and puts them back in the net for another day. And then she throws them out again.
Yeah, maybe a softer way. Like, I don't... Maybe let them walk to the edge and stand there and maybe, like, fall off of it and see how they... Throwing them off's a bit aggressive, but yeah, that's what life does. It just throws us off of the nest.
All right. Well, we're at about 20 minutes or 23. Maria, there's some great things in there. The edit quote will be your point that you've just made. The one about enabling, not protecting. So that'll be what's at the start as well for those that hear it. So hopefully next week we'll be back with more of us and we'll talk through. I know we want to do a bit on the requirements for tool sets soon as well. And if you've got any questions, get in touch with us on the usual numbers and ways of doing it. The podcast is there. Enterpriseagility.info is the site. Also, I'm probably going to be setting up some kind of learning management system where all of our podcasts can go. You can go and watch them all and use them as educational tools as well. Maria, thank you very much. I hope you have a good time till we meet next.
And you as well. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Okay, that will be the end of the recording. That was lovely, actually. Really
fabulous.
Nice things
thank
in there.
You.
Yeah, really enjoyed that, actually. I love it when a simple structure can reveal such good things. You said something, I've made note, 13:59, you said something that I thought could be the front edit. But then the thing then at the end, 21:41, when you said, you know, I've learned to enable teams rather than protect them and the whole idea of that, perfect. So,
yeah, it's a hard lesson. I'm still, that's the other concept. I wasn't sure if I should call it out. I don't want it to be intimidating for like more junior folks learning about the space, but... And this has been just in my head the past 2 weeks. I didn't want to curse. it's a lot of fuck around and find out. Give it a try.
Yeah.
Kick the tire. Throw the bird out of the nest. See what happens.
We will never know until we start moving. I agree with that completely. Yeah, we've had a lot of that on our trip in Africa. It was like, well, how's that going to work? And I'd go, I've no idea. You'll find out when we get there. Do they have toilets? Who knows? We'll find out.
Not necessary.
Yeah. Okay, all right. I'll get on with other things. Absolutely lovely to speak to you again, Maria. Really nice, really nice.
Well. Good to have you back. It wasn't the same without you.
Thank you, thank you. It's always nice to be needed.
That's it for this episode. Why not check out our back catalog of previous episodes and show notes? Go to enterpriseagility.info to connect and sign up. See you next time on the Enterprise Agility Mastery Podcast.